Anyway.
All right, well, let's
we're here for a purpose.
We are here for a purpose. We can discuss PIMS all day if you want to.
Good.
You probably couldn't, really.
You'll have to remind me of the songs that I did choose.
Oh, we'll go through them later. Okay. Anyway, I'm talking to Catherine Campbell. Who's sitting in her living space.
My Christmas festive.
It's very festive. It's a lovely Sunday afternoon. We're drinking PIMS lemonade. It's delightful.
Without ice, I might
Without say. Ice, yep. And we've got cheese and lots of other things. So mm-hmm. it should be a very relaxed time.
Should be very relaxed.
Now, Catherine, you're a nurse. Or rather, you're a school nurse.
Yes.
There's no difference, right?
No, there isn't. I'm basically a nurse full stop.
You're a nurse full stop.
Yep. I'm a nurse full stop, but I'm a paediatric nurse.
Uh-huh.
Which means...
the kiddies.
That's it, as opposed to paedophiles. I know there has been some confusion in regard to that word previously.
Really?
Oh, no. Did
people come in and bang on doors saying you should shut this down?
No, not usually.
Oh, that's good.
No. Paediatric as in PAED.
I have two children. I'm very familiar with paediatrics
now.
Imagine. Before that, you just go, it's over there. That's a different wing.
Yep.
Before we even get into it, we need to clarify that this is your wedding anniversary also.
It is.
What a lovely way to spend your wedding anniversary.
With you.
Talking to me.
That's right. Well, I have spent the morning with my husband. 23 years today.
23 years.
We got married at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Wow, that's nice.
Nice.
Actually,
and
so
early.
Did we. We got married at 11.
It's a good time.
So the party goes much longer.
Well, we just left the party at about 4:30 and then went off and had our own party. So.
Oh, we did not.
No?
We did not leave till 10:30.
Really? No, we had to be out. But, 23 years ago.
Wow. 91.
90.
Good maths.
Phew, I was thinking, don't you have been thinking the wrong time all this time?
I have heard that before, but no. 1990.
1990. It was the year of puffy sleeve wedding dresses, bows on the back of wedding dresses, baby breath abounding.
Baby breath abounding.
Yeah, in the hair and in bouquets. And it's a bad time. And probably you've seen the photos, but I had the largest pair of glasses you could probably find.
I didn't actually... I saw on your Facebook that you had said, I didn't pay attention to the design.
Mm.
I think that might be the difference between...
They're pretty big.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yep.
That is true. I wore glasses in the 90s and, well... still do at times. And I do remember them being massive.
Yeah.
I remember going to the optometrist mid-90s maybe, and he was like, what are you wearing these for?
Well, I'd lusted after these Jonathan Skeets forever. And when I finally could afford them, well, I just thought I was the flashiest thing. So. And luckily they were white, so they matched my wedding dress. It's not like they were sort of purple or anything.
Oh, I'm going to have to look at this photo a little bit later. the first thing I wanted to ask you in regards to this was, did you grow up in Canberra?
I moved here when I was 11.
Oh, okay.
Yep, so I was born in Newcastle and moved to Wollongong when I was 5.
Wow.
And then we moved to Canberra when I was 11.
Did the Steel City tour?
Basically, yeah, but not through Steel City. My dad worked in hospital administration.
Oh, okay.
So he worked at the Mater Hospital, then moved to Wollongong Hospital, and then we came to Canberra. With the birth of Medibank Private.
What year was
75.
75. That was when Medibank, that was Gough, right?
Yep.
Yes, I'm sure my father's mentioned all the good things Gough did.
All the good things Gough did. So that's what brought us to Canberra.
Mm.
So, which is really interesting because my dad had turned down a job at the Woden Valley Hospital only a year before that because he didn't want to come to Canberra.
And then what swayed it a year later?
No idea. But we lived in Fisher and Canberra was the furthest suburb south.
Yeah.
When we got
now there's
here.
28 more
yeah,
suburbs.
Yeah, now you just keep going. And
it's the same everywhere, isn't it? Northwest and east and south. But do you miss the beach? Because I grew up on the Central Coast, so do you miss the beach?
No,
I miss Newcastle
I
beaches.
Sand.
Really?
Oh, look, the beaches would be great if it wasn't for the sand. Don't you think? It's everywhere.
I guess so.
And you just take it home with you and, you know, I like the beach. I don't like the sun, so beach, sun.
No, pretty fair complexion.
Fair complexion, can't stay out there too long. So I'm sort of an in and out type of girl at the beach. And after my near drowning episode in January this year, I'm a bit cautious of
You're going to have to explain that in a bit more detail. No, you can explain that right now. I'd be much appreciated.
Uh-huh.
A near drowning?
Yes, literally at Culburra Beach down near Nowra. And we normally don't swim at a patrol beach, but this day we did.
You normally don't swim at a patrol beach?
No, we swim at a part of the beach that isn't patrol.
Oh, so you go down there regularly?
Yeah, yeah. Every year we usually go down there. And anyway, we thought this day it was a bit rough, we might swim in the beach.
Yeah.
And so off I went in with my sister and going out further and further. You have to remember, I take my glasses off and I'm legally blind without them, right? So you spin me round once and I don't know which way I'm going.
Is that true, legally blind?
Yeah, I am. My next stop is a guide dog.
Wow.
Yep. And anyway, cut a very long story short, sandbar went out from underneath me.
Yeah.
And then I got pummeled by several waves. It sort of started to be carried away in a rip.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll do the right thing and put my hand up.
Yeah.
Do all those things, try not to panic. Panicked immediately. And I'm not a panicker, but yeah. I could feel myself. I couldn't catch my breath. Anyway, luckily my sister saved me several minutes later because the lifeguards were surrounded by a gaggle of teenage girls.
Yeah.
And they didn't realise that I was in fact drowning. Got up to the beach. My sister eventually got me up to the beach. She saved my life.
Wow. And what have you done for her in return?
I know. Oh, don't guilt me.
I've seen enough 80s sitcoms to know that the only way you can make that right is to save her life.
Is it?
Yeah.
Jeez.
That always
Ruth!
Happens.
If you're listening,
put the sharp knife down.
That's right.
There you go, you saved her.
Oh, I have to think of something to do. Mm. So, wow. Yeah, that was it, sort of freaked me out a little bit because I'm not overly confident in the surf, but I've never felt worried.
So, all your training, all the instructions,
all the things I knew
just goes away,
just disappeared. Panic was the first thing that happened.
I've been in a few like hairy situations in unpatrol, especially in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And, I don't think I panicked in any of it, but there were a few where I was like, that could have ended badly.
Yeah, it just happened so quickly. That was the thing.
And I get nervous. I love the beach, but I get nervous as soon as my feet can't touch the sand.
Me too. Yeah. I'm sort of up to my neck type of girl, and once I get any, you know, I don't like swimming in things where I can't touch the bottom.
But I didn't used to. Apparently, I used to
go right out.
My parents used to say it. Sit on like flotation things and just sit there getting taken out to sea. And yeah, many times my dad had to come up. But one of my earliest memories is my dad in a similar situation. He used to be a surf lifesaver, but he was trying to get the attention of the surf lifesavers who probably had
the gaggle of girls
around them. And he actually went out and saved. That was one of my first memories of being at the beach, is seeing my dad go out and help someone just because they weren't doing their job. And I was like, oh, he can swim.
Yeah.
It's weird when you see your
parents. And people sort of said to me afterwards, did you go and tell them off? And I thought, well, I should have. But I was actually really, I felt shocking afterwards. I really did. I had that whole adrenaline burst and, you know, then we walked back and I'm all shaky.
That would have been great, you going up and telling them.
I just like to tell you.
I nearly drowned. Well, you didn't drown.
No, but I felt like I was going to. So now you know my story.
I do, thank you. Well, we're going to look at your first song that you told me, which was Sunrise.
A really interesting Sunrise
by Rolf Harris.
Yes.
And you wrote that you were embarrassed to put that out there to the world.
Well, I am a bit.
Why are you embarrassed?
Oh, well, Rolf Harris is
at
the most
moment. Well, he's
popular person, is he? But he
certainly not at the moment.
Not at the moment. He's the more pedo type of person, PED rather than PAED.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just embarrassing admitting you kind of like Rolf Harris.
Again, I think you're right, but it's not Timey Kangaroo Down score.
No.
And I've never heard of this song.
Have you listened to it?
I have, and I was like, I get that. That's a cool song. I'm going to play that to my daughters, and I reckon they'll love it.
Well, one of the reasons I picked it was because it reminds me of the trips we used to do between Canberra and Newcastle. And we used to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. We had a Valiant station wagon with an electric rear window.
Yeah, wow.
It was so cool. Had a button on the inside. And Dad would lay foam in the back.
Yeah.
And so my sister and my brother and myself would lie in the back.
Yeah.
My younger sister would lie in the back seat with all the luggage surrounding her, as was the safety norms of the day. And we would leave Canberra at 2 o'clock in the morning and get to Newcastle at about 8 o'clock in the morning in time for breakfast at Nanaran Pass. And so as the sun was coming up in the morning, we had an 8-track stereo in the car.
Nice.
And my dad was a member of the World Record Club.
Okay. They used to send things
out. They would send something out every month. And so we had a very eclectic taste of music in the car. But he always used to put Rolf Harris on in the morning to wake us up.
Wow.
So it was sunrise as you're looking out the back window of the Valiant, watching the sun come up.
Sunrise, she bring in the morning. Sunrise, bring in the morning. Fluttering the skirts all around. Sunrise, she come with the dawning. Sunrise, come with the dawning. Spreading all the light all around. Sunrise on the kangaroo paw. Sunrise on the kangaroo paw. Glistening the dew all around.
So it's a really strong memory.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
2 o'clock in the morning, man. I know. That's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
Justine, are you listening to this? We struggle to leave by 10. That's our early start.
I know. And it's so dangerous, though.
Why would you leave it?
Because my dad hates traffic. I know.
Do you know
how much traffic was there in...
Yeah, exactly. There couldn't have been that much traffic.
No, but... And the roads were terrible. It wasn't the Hume Highway like we know it now. It was, you know...
The oldie one, you had to go through Mittagong and all
Picton
those areas.
And all those up through there. We used to leave. He'd go to bed at 8 o'clock and then he'd get up at 1:30 and we'd all in our pajamas get dragged.
Why didn't he leave at 8 o'clock? He could have left at like 6, there's no traffic.
But you know, all the stuff you know now about your circadian rhythms, you know, tell you that 4 o'clock in the morning is the worst time.
Yeah, to drive.
Yeah.
Oh, he's refreshed though after a 5-hour sleep.
He's good, he's got all his family in the car. And there's my younger sister. Packed in amongst the luggage, wasn't moving anywhere.
It is a nice, like, image and a nice image of the song, but you had to just risk your lives to have that memory.
Yeah. But, you know, it's that real, I just love that song, that sort of that whole beat of it.
Yeah, as I said, I'd never heard it before, but as soon as I heard it,
and
I was
like,
oh, I get it.
And, you know, it was actually written with, do you remember Harry Butler?
Yeah, of course, in the Wild.
Yeah. He and Rolf Harris and Harry Butler wrote it together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different from
anything
a wobble
else.
Board.
Yeah, and on that, the rest of that cassette was things like The Court of King Caractacus, you know, where we all
just
had to sing
by.
Along. That's it. Yeah, we all had to sing along the bit. So, as I said, very interesting taste in music. We had James Last and, and Henry Mancini and then Oliver and Fiddler on the Roof.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
No Wiggles in those days.
No. Yeah. I don't know what we listened to, but it certainly wasn't that diverse.
Yeah. He wasn't really into modern music, my dad.
No.
But, yeah, that's probably one of the earliest memories of a song that I can remember was the old Sunrise. And the didgeridoo. I thought, I'm going to learn to play that one day.
No.
Not an Indigenous bit in me.
There's still time.
Is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of digits in student services at school. Maybe I should
give them
start
a crack.
This week.
Someone will know how to do it.
Yeah.
All right, well, we might move on to your second one, which I'm not even going to pronounce the artist, but it's Gabrielle's
Oboe,
which is the theme from The Mission, right?
It is, yep.
And all through high school I had teachers who loved playing us this piece of music.
Is that right?
Yeah. Write an evocative piece based on this music. In drama, let's do a movement piece to this piece of music.
To this piece of music. Yeah. So you will know this piece of music.
As soon as I saw it, I was like...
For me, it's a bit of a Pavlovian dog sort of response that I have to this.
Really? What do you do when it comes on?
I just
on?
Relax.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I used to listen to it when I was really stressed, and that would be my relaxation piece of music.
Nice.
And so I listened to it all the way through my pregnancy with Claire, thinking this baby's going to be Zen baby, you know, come out listening.
Yeah.
And I had the plan, you know, that's what we're going to play in the labour. I'll forget that. Yeah.
Yes, the same here. We have a playlist. Yeah. They always tell you these things, but
they do,
what I can gather, the playlist is the first thing that gets binned.
That's the first thing that went out the window.
Now, you work in paediatrics.
Yep.
Have you worked in a midwife capacity?
No, so I'm not a midwife. I've been to a few deliveries as part of my general training, but no.
I just wanted to know, is that all, plan everything is just a way to make you more relaxed in preparation? Mm. Or?
Yeah, I think so. But then there's people that plan things to the nth degree that make life so difficult.
How so?
Well, because they will only have this at this time. Like, their plan is that they can't have gas until they're 7 centimetres dilated, you know, despite the fact that
they're in horrible pain.
They're in
horrible
pain
gas,
and they need something.
Yeah.
So, there's my motorcycle man.
But yeah, it's
So yes, I did have it's something. There's the motorbike.
We'll just pause for a moment while the motorbike fangs past.
Flick.
Mm. So you had this music playing in preparation for the...
But I listened to it long before all of that. It was something I actually wanted played as I walked into the church to get married.
Yeah.
But I was told I wasn't allowed to have that.
By whom?
Oh, parents. I had to have it. Well, I got married in the church and I wish we hadn't, but that was 23 years ago and I've got over it.
I guess so. I mean, by the time we got married in the church and they allowed... Not whatever music.
Yeah.
I wanted hot chocolate, everyone's a winner, baby, when we finish.
Yeah, you weren't allowed that?
No, but my wife was very helpful for the priest, cajoling him. Do you think this is appropriate? You don't have to even play for cut down.
So you didn't get to have it at all?
No.
That's a shame. Instead I had Purcell's trumpet voluntary, you know.
Bog standard.
As if I care.
Yeah.
23 years later.
It's not about you.
No, it's not about me.
So it's a relaxation song.
It is. And I literally hear it now and it just makes me feel calm.
Goes over the waterfall.
It is, but the Gabriel's oboe part, have you ever seen the movie?
I have, yeah.
He uses the oboe to try and calm the savages, so to speak. Yes.
Oh, now I wanted to ask you, when did you decide to become a nurse?
That's a really hard question because I've always known that's what I wanted to do.
Really? Always?
Yeah.
That's very lucky.
I know. My mum was a midwife, and so I sort of grew up with her nursing textbooks around. I don't know, that's what I just wanted to do. Maybe because I was around hospitals because of Dad working in them. Hospitals were never scary, horrible, smelly places.
No. I grew up in a lot of hospitals.
Did you? Were you sick? Or?
No, I had a lot of things wrong with me.
Oh, okay.
Like the old grommets
in
the ears 3 or 4 times, tonsils out, adenoids, lots of good stuff like that. So
yeah.
I was in and out a lot in the, I guess, the first 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more with the old grommets. I didn't go away for a while. So always. What about your siblings? Are they... None of them, anything to do with that?
No.
Interesting.
And, you know, I did that very typical thing that I'm seeing now, is stuff around in year 11 and 12. So I actually didn't get a high enough mark to get into general nursing to start with.
Yeah.
So I went nannying for 6 months before I got into doing the enrolled nurse course. So I sort of came in the long, slow way. So I was an enrolled nurse first before I was a registered nurse.
What's an enrolled? What's the difference between
an enrolled nurse? Probably, doesn't have quite the responsibility, does a lot of the basic care, can't give drugs, does all those sorts of things.
And was that difficult for you to do, or you were just like, this is the means to an end?
It was actually what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I've never really wanted to be into the high-powered management side of things. You know, really, that does nothing for me. So.
Yes, yeah. It's the same.
Yeah. Quite happy just being a pleb.
You're hardly a pleb.
Well, I know, but, you know.
I know what you mean. There's no ladder you have to climb up in nursing.
No. It's too much dog eat dog to get there anyway.
Yeah, you have to tread on a few toes, don't you?
Yeah. So for me, that's what I've always wanted to do.
Wow, that's very
nice,
isn't it?
It's really weird because you don't hear that anymore. Well, I did want to be a nun there for a little while. But
you wanted to be a nun?
Well, because I went to an all-girls school
And
we went off to retreats every year and I would always come back thinking, this is for me.
It's the life
this
for me.
Quiet contemplation. Except I didn't like spinach. They had a lot of spinach, so that sort of ruled it out, really.
Are you still a fan of quiet contemplation?
No, not very good at it.
Really?
No.
That's awesome. Oh, good.
No, there's too many other good things to do.
Yeah, talking's way better.
Yeah.
Who wants to think?
No, who wants to just think?
No. Boring people.
Boring people. And they had to eat spinach. So
spinach and thinking's no.
It was always gritty, the spinach you had on the trip.
Gritty?
Yeah, like they hadn't washed, the nun in the kitchen hadn't washed it properly.
Oh. She hadn't been told to, maybe.
Maybe.
Just felt.
That's
never too gritty. To suffer, you need to suffer with this image. Just to...
That's probably what it is. Suffering is good.
So we'll move on to the third selection, which isn't a selection.
No.
You just said Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms.
I know, the whole album.
The whole album. It's fine. We'll just keep it like that.
Because I can't pick one because they're all... It's a bit of a time in my life album. You know, one of those things?
Yeah.
So it came out, I think, in 1985. And it was my first ever CD that I bought rather than an album.
When did you buy that first CD? In 85?
Late 85.
Wow.
So it was one of the first ones that actually was released on CD.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Were you born then?
In 85?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm beginning to feel so old talking about all these other things.
Well, I was born in 78.
Oh, thank God.
But again, thank you so much for saying that. How nice of you.
Well, that's
I think I was in my 20s.
Yeah, you look young, Matt. You're fine.
Thank you. here's $20. So that came out in 85 and you bought it on CD. But
yep.
So it's just the whole...
The whole...
CD.
Album. Different songs for different... So at the time, I was actually working in a ward called H Ward at the old Royal Canberra Hospital, the one that got blown up.
Yeah.
And it was a ward for long-term orthopaedics. So we had lots of guys in traction beds with really bad fractures, spinal fractures. But it was the best ward to work in. And we used to play the Brothers in Arms album of a morning while we went around and did washes and... made the beds, and we used to just turn it up and pump it out, and it's probably why it's one of my favourite. Walk of Life and Why Worry.
Walk of Life's a little insensitive
it
to
is,
be playing.
It is, to people that may be paralysed for the rest of their life, but, you know, there was a certain...
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. It
gallows humour.
Yeah, it was a great ward and a really fun time in my life. I suppose I was, 22, 23.
Yeah.
And just lots of laughs with the people that I worked with. But I do remember the day the Challenger space shuttle.
Yeah, 86,
January 86. And that morning we just played Brothers in Arms because it was the somber, somber mood. We didn't play any of the others.
Just that song.
Just that song. So, yeah, I'm a bit... I really do like Dire Straits. In fact, I probably almost like making movies better than Brothers in Arms now that I think about it.
You can't go back.
But I can't go back because I wrote it down.
Yeah.
And Andrew was saying to me, but what about... I'll stop.
That's the problem. You just have to choose it quickly and then move on.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I had to do.
Because it drives you crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So it was that whole album of the time. So I never got to see Dire Straits. I'm like, Mr. C.
Yeah. He got to see them.
He got to see them live.
Well, can they reform? Everyone else has.
Are they any of them dead?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think they are.
There's a cameo appearance by Mr. Campbell there.
That's fine, yeah. He's our Dire Straits expert. We kept him just in case.
And I still like Mark Knopfler. Yeah. Like these days. So we have quite a few Mark Knopfler, you know, single albums. And yeah. I suppose all the music that I've chosen is actually really unadulterated music too. It's all very non-electronic sounding. So it's pure music.
That's true. Pure music.
Pure music. So it's using voices and using instruments as they're meant to be used.
Yeah.
That's deep, isn't it?
Very deep.
Gee, these pins must be working.
We've had two sits. Yeah, I guess you're right. It is a lot of that. It's a lot of just... voice, not much technical aspects to it.
Yeah.
Get a bit more meaning through. I guess you can hear the lyrics a bit clearer as well.
You can.
But you're a lyric person, obviously.
I am. I do like lyrics, but I don't overanalyze lyrics.
No. Just enjoy them.
Yeah, yeah, because they can be a bit deep.
Yeah, and sometimes if you analyze them too much, they fall apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's really a terrible line, really. It's just to fit in a rhyme.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, what rhymes with orange?
Yeah, well, why did we write that?
Yeah.
Why did we write a song called Orange?
Yeah. Why didn't we go purple?
And a lot of times, too, if you analyse it, you can see the slotted words. In. Like always or, you know, all. Just to add, we need in a syllable, so we'll chuck that in there. And
so it's best not to analyse them and just enjoy the music for what it is.
To talk a bit more about nursing.
Yes, keep coming back to that.
Yeah, I'm fascinated.
I've been doing it for such a huge majority of my life.
Yeah, well, my mother-in-law's a nurse, and it's just interesting that I find a lot of links between, or a lot of similarities between the life of a nurse and the life of a teacher.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly a lot of complaining about the same executive structure and the people above you.
Yep. And a lot of the same need for bladder control.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that's very
if you
true.
If there's poor bladder control around you, it gets very awkward.
Nasty.
Nasty for everyone. but what's the hardest part? Or what was the hardest part of being a nurse in hospitals, I guess, for you?
I think it's looking after people whose quality of life is pretty shit, really.
Yeah.
And no... chance of quality of life improving and feeling pretty helpless about doing anything about it.
Yeah, and that was what I was was going to come to is how do you get through those times, especially in pediatrics? I'd imagine there'd be a lot of heartbreaking things.
People say that to me a lot about peds. It must be so hard. Kids are so resilient, though.
Yeah.
And you'll have kids that are so unwell. So I did for a period of my nursing career, oncology nursing and pediatrics as well. So you see those kids at their absolute worst. You know, they are so sick, and then suddenly something will happen and they'll brighten up. And even for 5 minutes, you don't see that in adults. You know, they just keep on pulling something out of the bag. And so you get your strength from seeing those sort of things, from seeing how families pull together. And there's lots of tears. Sometimes it's just too sad and you don't know what else to do. You know?
Yeah.
I'm somebody who I can't, if I'm feeling, I'm brave to a certain extent, but it's really horrible. I've cried with people.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think. I know people like to put things on Facebook about, like, people say nurses don't do this and nurses, but I've never heard anyone say that nurses are overpaid or anything like that ever. But just to, in a job where if you go to work on a certain day, that someone may have died.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
That. Death actually isn't the worst thing. It really isn't. It's seeing somebody in a state where you know there is no, well, there's always hope, but you know that they're not going to get better.
Is it the before death stuff that's the hard part?
Yeah. And sometimes for them, they're quite happy. Well, they're not happy, but they're the happiest person
in the room?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's all the family that have difficulty coming to terms with what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's the difficult part to watch. Nurses have shocking senses of humour. We have really black humour, probably like teachers in that regard.
Yeah.
And it's a real protective mechanism. And you go out with a bunch of nurses and it's outrageous, the things that we talk about.
Well, I do enjoy asking, grandma as she's now, and saying, what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen? And then she, all those stories, they're fantastic.
Yeah. And there are... There's very weird things that I've seen.
Yeah, people do weird things to themselves.
Well, they do, but probably one of the weirdest things I have seen, I hope this is PG, it's not PG.
No, of course not.
When I worked in H Ward, the Brothers of Arms album, Ward as I like to call it, we had a guy in traction, he had both legs in traction, he had pins coming out of him everywhere, and I happened to walk in one day, opened the curtains, didn't think to knock, and there was his girlfriend perched up on top of him.
Wow.
Dodging the pins and the traction bit.
That's commitment.
I just sort of closed the curtains and walked away.
Good work.
Yeah.
She's a nice girl.
She was a nice girl, wasn't she, for helping out?
I bet.
I think he knew her.
Oh, right.
And didn't bother to
stop and ask?
No, even if he didn't.
Well, you think she was just walking past? And
no.
Just helping out?
Possibly.
Good Samaritan.
Volunteer. There's all kinds of volunteering jobs you can do.
Yeah. The spirit of Florence Nightingale.
I don't think Flo would have been something like that.
Well, luckily not. Well, on that charming note, we might move on to your fourth choice, which is Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
You think it's right out there? Why is that right out there?
No, it's not right out there.
No.
I love Queen.
It's endured.
It has.
That song never goes away.
No. And again, I remember watching it on Countdown continuously.
Yeah.
And just my auntie sort of first introduced it to me, I think. So was that 1974,
75? Yeah, right, it is early 70s. Yeah, mid-70s.
And I thought she was pretty cool because she liked Skyhooks and Queen, and I was, 10 or 11. I thought, wow.
Skyhooks.
Yeah. But it's sort of that whole, Bohemian Rhapsody has everything.
Yeah.
Like everything.
It's got ambition. Ambition that not many other songs in the history of rock.
And it actually pulls it off.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not that it just thinks it's going to do it. It does it.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got those operatic parts and you've got the tragedy and... Oh, the pathos, and then you've got the heavy metal rock beard, and Oh, got it all. And I love Freddie. How do you not love Freddie? God rest his soul.
He's a great front man, that boy.
Oh, wasn't he?
Born to be in front of 80,000 people, wasn't he?
His spray on pants.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can't believe he was gay. I just never saw
really?
That.
Really? No. It was pretty unusual that he was. But, I think just it's, again, the music about it all.
Like, yeah.
When you read stuff about how they recorded that track, yeah, know, how many times they had to lay down another bit and another bit and another bit, and it was before all that sort of synthesized.
Yeah, you couldn't record and then just do it electronically.
Yeah, overdub it that way. So it was all done amazing. And then I was reading, because I thought, oh, gee, I better read something about this. I'm not just like it. But they actually released it. No, they didn't release it. Kenny Everett. Do you remember Kenny
Everett? Oh, I love Kenny Everett, yes.
Well, he was a DJ on the radio, and they sent him a copy of it, and he would just play snippets of it. And one day he played 14 snippets of it, and the radio station just went crazy with people ringing up and saying, what is this amazing album?
And I guess it's what it could be sound like, yeah.
And that, because they were told on the radio they couldn't actually play it because it was so, it was 6 minutes long.
Too long.
And it was too long for radio.
Wow.
And it actually, so people were then demanding the record and it actually hadn't even been made.
That's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was that pirate radio? Didn't you do pirate radio?
I don't know. I'm getting confused with the Goodies now.
The Goodies had a pirate radio episode.
Yeah, they did.
Take a walk through the Black Forest.
That's it. Do,
yes. We seem to have similar childhoods,
and yet I'm that much older.
I think maybe because my father is very immature and I had older brothers, so maybe that's...
Right, maybe that's where it's happened.
That crossover, weird crossover thing. But yes.
Yeah, so...
See, I got, I guess, introduced to Bohemian Rhapsody when it was... The soundtrack on Wayne's World.
Right.
When that came out. And then that was re-released, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it got to number one. But
yeah, I think it did.
But since then, it's never gone. I mean, you work in schools as I do, and that song never goes away. It's always...
Always there. But we are like, the
have
champions.
You seen, have you heard that? Do you know that song? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have champions, and we will rock you.
Yeah,
I have
they
a lot
all
of
know those.
School-friendly
Fat
song.
Bottom Girls, I don't know that so much.
No, Bicycle Race.
Bicycle
It's a weird song.
Some plenty of weird Queen songs. But again, Queen is something that I just love to listen to.
Yeah.
Can't help it.
Has the musical, the stage show come to Australia?
Oh, is that We Will Rock You?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it has. I haven't seen it, but I have seen a Queen, what do you call them, sort of...
Like a tribute show.
Tribute show. My God, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could have sworn that was Freddie up the front there.
Where did you see that?
The Royal Theatre Convention Centre, ACT.
You see, I've seen a lot of Beatles tribute shows, but they've all been in like RSL clubs or something like that.
Yeah.
Which have been okay.
Yeah.
They can do the early stuff, but then the later stuff you just go, it's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
But a Queen, that would be much harder.
It was good. It was really good. And apparently they couldn't really ever perform Bohemian Rhapsody live because of the amount of...
Yeah, God.
Yeah.
Well, I might look that up and see if I can find a live version.
Yeah.
And see what it actually sounds like.
Good luck if you can, because I don't know if they're actually... They ever performed it
the
in
internet
its entire...
The internet has everything.
Of course it does. You only have to look.
That's right.
But see, Bohemian Rhapsody is one of those things that can be performed while intoxicated in front of your nieces and nephews.
I think it's really the only way it can be performed, really.
Yeah, so I have a few nieces and nephews who are somewhat scarred by the fact that their auntie and their mother sang.
I'm guessing along with the music rather than just a cappella?
Along with the music.
Yeah.
With air guitar.
Full hair banging?
Yep, air guitar, the works. Operatic stance,
you
name it.
Power stance.
Yep, it was the full on.
I look forward to it.
There's probably a video of that on YouTube too, if you look closely enough.
Well, I look forward to doing that to my children.
Yeah, I think it's a rite of passage.
Yeah, just to have them.
Yeah.
Saying stop.
Yeah, please.
And didn't they enjoy it? Did they enjoy it? Then not enjoy it? Then enjoy it? Then not enjoy it?
Yeah. Like, and how long is this going to go on for?
Oh, how long? 6 minutes. No wonder they can only play a snippet.
Yeah.
14 snippets would have been better than the whole song. Carry on, carry on, 'cause if nothing really matters.
body's aching all the time. Goodbye, everybody. I've got to go. Gotta leave you all behind and face the truth. Mama, ooh, I don't wanna die. Sometimes wish I'd never been born at all.
The next thing I wanted to talk to you about was going from, when did you move into the school system?
So in 2009, as part of a pilot program, they decided...
Isn't that recent, 2009?
Yep, they decided to put nurses in schools. And I must admit, I was pretty much over the whole hospital gig by then. I'd been doing shift work for 25 years.
Yeah.
I needed some weekends and I wanted a bit of a life.
Yeah.
And thought, schools, how hard can that be?
Ha ha! Is that really what you thought?
Yeah.
Schools. I think that's what everyone who doesn't work in education thinks.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You have no idea until you've been in there.
Yeah.
And it's a totally different form of nursing that I, you know, that obviously in the hospital that's very hands-on clinical sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't get to do that, and I'm sort of sad that I've lost a lot of those skills, but I've actually gained a whole heap of other skills doing what I do.
Would it be accurate to say that, like, the counselling side of things is the thing that's...
Officially, I'm not allowed to call it counselling, but we can call it therapeutic conversation.
Therapeutic. I'm going to just write that
down. It's a good word, isn't it? And I believe teachers have therapeutic conversations with students as well. And that's a way of saying that you... talk to them.
Yeah.
Or you allow them to talk to you, because so much of this job that I do now is on relationship building and on listening. On being non-judgmental, just helping them find where they are in the world. They actually don't want you to solve their problems nine times out of ten.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
They just like,
someone to acknowledge them as
there.
A person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the phrases I hear a lot, usually from around year 8, year 9, girls more than anything else. I don't know if boys ever vocalise any emotion that they ever have. is that I don't know who I am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the key things of key tasks of adolescence is finding your identity.
Yeah.
You know, and for some people they don't find it until they're 24, 25.
30, 35, 40.
40, 45.
Yeah.
Almost 50. Yeah. But I suppose as long as you establish some of it on the way. And so it's that trying out of things, and that's why you see, you know, young people trying all these weird and wonderful things.
Yeah.
They're actually trying to work out where they fit in. Do they want to be like their parents? Most likely not.
No, yeah.
Do they want to be like their friends? Probably not either.
No, that's a big thing is where...
Yeah.
They really go, I don't like my friends.
Yeah.
They're all very nice people.
Yeah.
Where does that put me in the
world? And it leaves them very lonely, because especially at that time, it's a real time of...
It's not so much lonely as isolated. There's a difference, don't you think?
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is just, isolated.
They don't... They're surrounded by people all day.
Yeah.
Noise and...
Yeah.
But then they just feel like...
And that's the other thing that people don't realise about school, how noisy it is. And so if you're anybody with even a minor mental health issue, can you imagine what it's like to be in a classroom with the noise?
And we've worked with a few people with more than minor.
More than minor.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And how difficult it is for them to be in a situation like that.
Yeah, it is right. You know? They are crazy noisy.
Yeah.
We might talk. We can talk a lot more about this because obviously it's what we're both involved in.
Yeah.
But we might move on to the next song, which is James Taylor and Lonesome Road. Again, like you said, it's very sparse and pared back and just singing.
And I'm a bit of a James Taylor fan, and Dad was, you know, very much Fire and Rain time was in that time of the World Record Club.
Yeah.
So that's I was introduced to James Taylor at a fairly young age.
Yeah.
But I have sort of probably over the last 10 years really come to enjoy James Taylor's music. And again, it's that basic guitar and voice. And, yeah. then, and Lonesome Road, it's sort of that like a cappella singing, really. Because I've always sung in choirs and love that sort of thing. And so, the words for that, this is one of the songs where actually the lyrics have actually spoken to me.
Yeah.
They're really very simple, but, you know.
Which ones in particular?
If I had stopped to listen once or twice, if I had closed my mouth and opened my eyes, you know.
That's good advice.
It is. It's really good advice. And just sung so very simply.
Yeah.
He actually sang it at John Belushi's funeral.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Walk down that lonesome road all by yourself. Don't turn your head back over your shoulder and only stop to rest yourself when the silver moon is shining high above the trees. If I had stopped to listen once or twice, if I had closed my mouth and opened my eyes, if I had cooled my head and warmed my heart, I'd not be on this road tonight.
I didn't realize it was such an old song. When I listened to it, it sounded like he was, I guess that's the power of his voice, I guess, that he sounds like an older man singing it.
He always has sounded like an older man,
I guess,
right?
That's true.
Yeah. And, yeah, but it sort of was a bit of a showstopper at John Belushi's funeral.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. And it's just very simple, doesn't go for very long. And again, it's another one of those, you know, I have on my playlist of quiet songs that I need for moments of of calming. And that's one of those ones that are on there.
Again, being in a school, you do need a moment of
calming.
Any moments of calming.
You do. It's not always easy to have, though. I have to force myself to have them. will.
Yeah, you need to right now.
Yeah, go and lock yourself in the bedroom, plug your earphones in.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't even have very much of a drive to get home anymore, so it's not like I can crank up, you know, a CD in the car.
Yeah, I find riding my bike home is very nice.
Yeah.
Unless it's summer, then it's horrible. But
unless it's winter and it's horrible.
No, winter's far better than summer.
Yeah, well, I don't do hot anyway.
Ali, you don't do hot?
No.
Now, you said before that you were singing.
Mm.
You've been singing a lot?
All my life.
All your life?
Yeah. I sang in choirs probably from about year 8 at school.
Yeah.
Mostly to do with church. But then I've sung with the Llewellyn Choir and Sing Australia for a while.
Sing Australia?
Yeah.
Are they the ones that released those songbooks?
Yeah.
Is that them?
Oh, no, you're thinking of the kids' ones, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great, those songbooks.
They were Sing Australia, weren't they?
Yeah, they were called Sing.
Oh, just called Sing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Sing Australia sort of a campaign. And then I had sung a couple of times with the Canberra Choral Society as a guest chorister.
A guest chorister?
Yeah.
Does that mean you're important?
No. Good luck with that, but no. It's not important to me.
Yeah, of course.
But life kind of got in the way this year of me singing.
Yeah, I saw that. You said that you didn't sing this year.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Does that mean life got in the way?
Oh, just it was too crazy busy and there was just too many other things going on.
Just this time of year?
Yeah, and other stuff. And then for me to, you know, to go to rehearsal, I come back and I cannot sleep because I'm absolutely wired. I've had such an amazing time and I feel so fulfilled.
Yeah, I know. I understand that.
That sounds really silly, but
it's called a performance high.
It is, and even just in rehearsal, I would get it being surrounded by people making the same sort of music. So
I don't think that's too weird.
Yeah. Is that?
No, of course not.
So maybe I need to rethink my opinion of myself.
Oh, attained closure here today. I'm very happy.
Phew, it's been therapeutic after all.
It has been a therapeutic conversation after all.
Yeah.
But getting back to in schools, mm-hmm. getting back to that, like, so what are the really spiky parts of your job in school? To be a school nurse.
Mm.
Because you have this, you know, professional code of conduct and you have to report things obviously, and I'm sure you've had to report a lot more things than most people.
Yes, I have a hotline to care and protection.
You do, yes, the Catherine button.
Catherine calling.
Yeah, and but what are the really difficult situations, I guess?
Do you know, for me, it's to do with young people. First of all, it takes me a lot of time sometimes to build that trust that I go, this is bigger than what you and I can deal with. We need to involve your parents. Because obviously I have teenage daughters and I would like to know what if they saw someone at school. I understand that if they needed to speak to somebody privately, that's a different, it's something. But if it was a big thing, I'd like to be involved and support them. For a lot of young people, they don't have that supportive adult at home.
I was going to say, a lot of times that's not the issue, is it?
No. And so I work really hard with them to sort of say, look, we need to, if it's not mum and dad, is there someone else that we can get involved to help us be part of our team of getting you services?
Yeah.
Because when you're 14 or 15, well, unless you've got transport, unless you've got money, unless you've got a whole lot of things are closed to you, you know, you can't get places, you can't access services. And then they finally agree to me contacting mum or dad.
Yeah.
And then I do my best nurse thing about, you know, how we see these things in adolescence, blah, blah, blah. And they go, oh, they're just being teenagers, and they are totally dismissive of it. You know, and that's really difficult for me. That's the sort of stuff I bring home.
Yeah, because no one's looking out for them.
Yeah. And then what do you do? Like, what's your next step after that? When the parents, I've got parents whose kids have been off to the doctors and said, yes, you have had severe depression for a year. We'd really like you to do a trial of antidepressants. And the parents totally flatly refuse to do that, you know. And you think, this kid will die one day.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they won't. But that, what's it doing to their self-esteem and to their everything else in the meantime? So they're the really, really tough things that I struggle with.
Yeah, it's, I mean, again, it's when the... Because they still are only kids, aren't they? It's such a difficult transition time in your life.
Being 14, 15 is a really powerless time in your life.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't understand how people forget that.
Yeah, they do, though.
They just dismiss teenagers they're being just teenagers and, oh, get over it.
Yeah.
And, oh, they're just seeking attention.
And, they might be seeking attention, but for a really good reason.
Yeah.
You know. And, it's, you know, if they just hung around with different people, they'd be better, or they just did this. But they actually don't have any skills to do that.
No.
You know. And my role is to really refer young people on to the places that can help develop those skills.
Yeah.
But if you don't have parental support, you've got Buckley's if it ever happens.
Yeah, exactly. And then you see these kids day after day after day, and you...
And teachers, God bless them, say, well, what are you doing?
Really?
Well, I've tried. You know, or haven't you fixed it yet? And it's that expectation, too, of being able to fix something that's actually been a chronic problem in this young person's life for most of their life.
Yeah.
And it's to do with poor parenting.
Well, yeah, a lot of the situations that I've had to deal with, a lot of the times you talk to the parents or the parents of the cause.
Yeah.
And what you can't tell the kid.
No.
Your parents suck at being parents.
Yeah.
what do you say to them? How do you gently tell them that maybe that...
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I say to them, you know what? I actually think your parents are wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably not going to win me any any parents as friends, but sometimes they need to know that it's actually not them that's the sole cause of what's happening in their life. And poor parenting, maybe that's not the right term. It's for a lot of these parents, they just don't know how to parent. They don't know how to parent adolescents, which is different to parenting two-year-olds and five-year-olds. It's a totally different kettle.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, I bet you can't. Two but, you girls. Know, there's plenty of people that have been ahead of you that have been able to give you some really good ideas.
Yeah.
You know. And keep the number of kids that I see that are told that they're worthless or you're hopeless or you're no good. You know, and I come from a very strengths-based background where that, you know, you try and pluck a strength out, you know, for them to find. And for many of these kids, they honestly cannot find a single strength.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's hard when you say to a student, you know, this is, you are good and you're a really nice person, and they go,
they say,
oh, my teacher said that I was a really nice person. The parents go, oh, they have to say that.
Yeah, that's right. They've been paid to say that.
What do you expect them to say to you?
Yeah.
Great. But I find the issue, one of the other major issues is parents, it's usually single parents, and being a single parent would have to be so demanding.
Yeah.
But the parents who dump on their kids, like...
their problems.
Yeah. They have, you know, year 7, year 8 students who come in and talk about their family and we...
Yeah.
If we could only get a bit more money here, and if our business does, like, you are 13 years old. Yeah,
this actually isn't your problem to be fixed.
It surely isn't.
Yeah, no.
And your parents shouldn't be confiding in you.
Yes.
All of this stuff.
I've got a young girl who's now in year 9, but since she's been in 7, she comes and tells me about what her mother's love life, you know, and the new boys that she brings home, and the things that those kids must be exposed to.
Yeah.
You know. And yeah, I could ring care and protection every 5 minutes, but obviously they're not going to react to things like that.
No, that's the other thing. If a student says this, you need to report it. Well,
I'll be on the phone in 2 seconds.
Exactly. You come down here and talk to 10 kids, and you'll be on the phone 10 times.
Yeah.
That's the difficult part. But we'll move on to...
That is the difficult part.
We'll move on to the last. We'll come to the last
one. I've gone into this century.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Very current. You are so hip with the kids.
I was hip before you even knew it. Because Claire, our eldest daughter, was right into Mumford & Sons before they became popular.
Oh, did she rebel against that? Does she hate the fact that they're popular?
She hates that other people got on the bandwagon.
Yeah, God, I hate it when other people like good stuff that I like.
See them in concert. Was it this year? Maybe last year now. God, the time flies. I love a good banjo. You know, how do you not love a banjo?
No, it's lovely to listen to.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, they're just are full of energy.
Yeah, it's amazing the sound they create with the banjo and guitar and
their voices.
And their voices.
Yeah.
And the big kick drum.
Yep. It's good music. Fun music.
Yeah.
Really good fun to go and see in concert. And
so why did you choose, like, I Will Wait over...
Oh, that's a bit of my exercise bike song.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's a good... I like riding to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of get the heart rate going pretty much. Again, that was one of those things that it's hard to pick a favourite song from any album because I have different songs that are my favourites for different things.
Yeah.
So they sang an a cappella version of Where Are You Now at the concert. And that was incredible. And, you know, the whole, again, at the Royal Theatre Convention Centre, ACT, they stood at the front. They had no microphones.
Wow.
No microphones. They told the crowd to shush. Everyone was silent and you could hear every word they say.
Wow, that sounds pretty nice.
That was impressive. And that I think that is on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Remember that?
I'll put that one down too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mumford & Sons, we listened to them a lot when we were on our motorbike tour in America.
Of course.
Especially riding through banjo country.
Yeah, see, I've been to America, it's 10 years ago. Wow, 10 years ago now, this year, for Christmas.
Yeah.
And we were in North Carolina. And that was it.
North Carolina.
That was a very nice
place. Did you go to North Carolina for?
We have a good friend who we met in England. Oh. She was from North Carolina and... we were living in England. She said, you should come over for Christmas. And we just said,
yeah.
Of course. So we scrimped and saved as much as we could and went to North Carolina for, I guess, a week and a half or 2 weeks.
So whereabouts?
We were based, well, we were in Raleigh.
Yep.
And then we went to her family for Christmas in Hickory, North Carolina.
Hickory, North Carolina.
Which there's plenty of Confederate flags.
Oh, I know, and guns.
And her stepdad was like the best stereotype I've ever met. He made me so happy. Confederate flag, Civil War memorabilia.
Oh, beautiful.
Obese.
Yep.
Loved talking about the Civil War. I used to just go to bed. I've got to go to bed and leave Justine talking about how the South didn't really lose.
They still leave it now.
Yeah. How he had to deal with the fact that so Carrie-Anne's older sister was going to marry a Yankee.
Oh no!
It just made me so happy. And he was a perfect example of a lesson that you learn as you grow up about grey area.
Yeah.
How on the surface, this racist, bigoted, obese man
was
so sweet and just
deep,
delightful.
Deep, a little bit deeper.
Yeah, yeah, so delightful and the whole accommodation of the South, the Southern hospitality.
Yeah.
But and he could eat like no one I've ever met. When we bought breakfast, he was not wasting a penny. Yeah. Anyway, so you went on motorbike.
Yes.
Through starting where and finishing where?
Starting in Virginia, through West Virginia, North Carolina, through Tennessee, but basically along the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Yeah.
Coming down every night, doing a bit more of the Blue Ridge Parkway, and then in Tennessee, particularly on a road we took called, and I can't even think of the name of it now, but it had 318 bends in 11 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. Tail of the Dragon. Oh, thank goodness it came. I've got the T-shirt to prove it. As a nice kitsch memento of...
There's plenty of kitsch stuff.
Isn't there plenty of kitsch stuff?
Thank you for my pamphlet on how to correctly
fold
my flag.
Yeah, well, I just couldn't pass that one up.
That made me very happy. From Cracker Barrel?
Yes.
I do love a bit of Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, we like sitting out on there... porches on their rocking chairs.
Oh, lovely.
It's a good place to sit.
Polishing your gun. And...
that's it. Polishing up my motorbike boots.
Fantastic. That sounds amazing. I love the bikes you had were huge.
Well, we have one here.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we have a Goldwing here. So we have two bikes. Andrew has his boy racer bike and I have my sit in the back and look glorious.
I have
a little queen wave that I like to do to the kiddies.
As you're going past.
As we're going past.
Oh, Mum, I think I saw the queen.
That's it. There she goes.
on the back of a motorbike.
She's not against wearing the old feather boa or anything when she's out there either. So.
Well, it's Sunday after all.
Well, yeah.
It's relaxed.
Know, it's comfy fun. Got to enjoy it. All I really need now on that bike is something that comes over that's my wine holder and my cheese platter.
As you're banging along.
I'm just helmet. Could do it.
I think casual fun pretty much sums you up.
Oh, yeah. You know.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I'm very happy to have finally come over and interviewed you.
Well, thank you.
It was very interesting. and that's it.